Welcome to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates, where we believe that advocacy is the answer. Hey, it's Angela, and today I'm here with Jim, and we have a really interesting topic for you today, and that is really striking the balance between being collaborative and adversarial. But before we get into that, I just want to remind everybody to please take a minute and rate our podcast on your podcast platform. Ratings really do help us and help others find the podcast. So if you wouldn't mind taking a minute to do that, we'd certainly appreciate it. So right into our topic, coming off of last week's episode about the motion to compel, you know, one of the things that comes to mind that I remember from my own practice and we hear from a lot of people is, you know, how do we really strike a balance between a system where we're expected to be collaborative and doing things between hearings and trying to all agree in a sense on elements of what's happening, and then also playing our very important role of holding the system accountable for our client. So I don't know, Jim, what are your thoughts on striking that balance?
Well, a lot of thoughts. I think one thing I don't want to do today, I'm going to fight the urge to get into a philosophical debate about whether dependency court should be as adversarial as it is or not. That's a huge discussion. In fact, it is an adversarial proceeding. That's where we find ourselves, and that's the world we have to operate in. But it's also very collaborative. And so I think in striking this balance, it's always good to lead with a softer hand and lead with collaboration first. That's what I've found. It establishes your relationships, but at the same time, almost concurrently, folks have got to take you seriously. That's what I've found. I've found situations where because I have a reputation for filing things, or one of my attorneys has a reputation that if something needs to be filed, they will file it. They will take the case to court. The collaborative relationship suddenly becomes so much more collaborative. The other side rises up to meet you because they have to. And these are all good relationships. It's not like they're bad relationships or anything. It's just that it's human nature that I will respond to you because, you know, you're a big dog and you've bitten me before. So when you bark at me again, I take notice this time. And that's how it works. That's just human nature in our system. It is amazing to me, getting back, I'm drifting back to the philosophical debate here. It is amazing.
You're trying to do it anyway.
Yeah. It is amazing to me to walk into the therapeutic courts within dependency, whether it's family treatment court, drug court, whatever kind of specialty court you have, and see this totally different kind of like kumbaya type atmosphere where people are applauding or banging cymbals or everything, every type of celebration for the parents. And the parents have got their warm, fuzzy feeling about being in court. And the judge is so kind and paternal towards them. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to get into whether those models work or not. I just look at them like these are the same attorneys, the same basic clients, the same judge. And it's got a totally different vibe from tomorrow at 1 o'clock in the afternoon where we're all at each other's throats about discovery issues and, you know, scheduling trial and all this stuff. And so I feel like our system doesn't have a balance. So if you feel kind of out of balance in your practice, it's because you're working on a system that is constantly rotating and pitching underneath you. So you got to be a little bit like a surfer. And you got to just kind of ride the wave that you're on and don't fight it too much, but you got to be able to read it. You got to be able to read, do I collaborate right now or do I need to be adversarial right now and take action?
Yeah. I mean, I think the hard part and so many attorneys walk into, you know, a culture like this is the way things are done. And sometimes collaboration can look like not doing a whole lot. And so I think an important part of this discussion is when we're talking about collaboration, we're not talking about taking it easy on people. We're talking about actively working in between the court hearings to make sure that everyone is doing what needs to be done and what's been ordered and what the client needs and what the parent needs. And then doing that till you reach a point where it's not working anymore. And then you have to turn on the adversarial part of the system because you've reached a place where that's not effective anymore. At the end of the day, people are only going to your point, collaborate actively with you if they know there is a consequence to not doing the things that you agree upon. Is that right?
Yeah, I think to an extent that's largely true. I think you're obviously going to see better collaboration when you know how to be adversarial. That's the relationship between the two approaches. But I do feel like you bring a good point about collaborating in between the court hearings. And if you do it at a level where you're really getting involved in the case and really trying to collaborate in a way that brings the other people forward as part of the team, as part of the solution, you're gonna find little shifts within your system. You'll see there are certain parents' attorneys out there maybe who operate in a silo. They do their job, they do it well, but no one ever brings them in on a case in between court hearings. You know, they talk to their client, they gather the records, and that's their job and that's what they do. But sometimes you'll reach out to an attorney like that, they're almost in a little bit of shock. Like, what do you need? You're not calling me for like a legal matter. No, I'm calling you about your client because I'm a little concerned she's drifting away on us. And I'd like to know what you think we could do to bring her back in. That can be a shock to the system for some parents' attorneys. But that's the kind of collaboration that when you start going deep in, and it works the same with case managers, but they're much more used to collaborating, obviously. If you can bring the team together outside of court and you get that reputation of being the kind of person who's really working the case, it makes your job a lot easier, I think, in the long run. That's one of the nice things about this, is that it makes it much easier to do your job. Once you get rolling as a person who does this kind of work, then people are accustomed to you reaching out and you're accustomed to doing it. You know who to reach out to, where to reach out to, where not to reach out, and where not to waste your time. So there's a lot of benefits to figuring out the balance.
So I imagine people get this in concept because everybody faces, you know, some degree of this, but I wonder if you might give an example of what it looks like where you practice.
Yeah, typically in the past, our office has always been willing and able to file termination of parental rights cases, for example, and take them to trial. And so beyond that, we also have a real regular motion practice where we're not afraid to file a motion to compel, like we talked about in the last episode. So because we're active adversaries in these cases, folks kind of intuitively know that we're going to be active collaborators, and they'll come to us with potential solutions. And that's happened to me quite a bit through the years, especially, you know, from the parents' attorney side. They have a case where they think there's some real merit to their parents' case, but the facts they know look awful. Mm-hmm. You know, the relationship is built there. They know they can kind of come to me. They think I'm the good cop or whatever, but they know they can come to me, I'm always willing to work a solution with them if there is one, or at least look for one. And so it's been really helpful, even on a shaken baby case. We have been able to work out solutions where we reached a resolution where I said, I need your client to let me treat him as if he did this. I don't need him to admit that he did this, but let me treat him like he did it. He needs to admit to an anger problem. He needs to admit he gets extremely frustrated when that baby cries. He does not need to admit he shook the baby. This is not a criminal court. If he's willing to do those things and engage all the services I would give someone like that, maybe we can get somewhere. This guy turned it around. The psychologist, the therapist, upon further evaluation after services, because he was willing to do everything I asked for, mm-hmm. him and me and his attorney were able to collaborate with a solution to get a shaken baby home that never would have gotten there without that collaborative approach of what do you need to do this. And so I asked for the moon and the attorney gave it to me. So that's an idea of how it can work. And it works, of course, a lot with case management, but there's this push and pull between being adversarial and being collaborative. You know, I regularly get calls from the agency sometimes saying where they're hurt because our attorney was so adversarial and mm-hmm. I thought we had such a good working relationship, and I understand it, but an attorney who sees, you know, some kind of maybe constitutional wrongdoing or civil rights infringement is liable to go off, you know, like that guard dog I was talking about earlier. You're liable to get bit if you mess with a client's civil rights. And so that kind of thing happens in our jurisdiction sometimes, where I see in real time the push and the pull between the adversarial and the collaborative nature. And it's always my most adversarial attorneys who are my most collaborative. So it's interesting that way.
Yeah, no, that makes good sense. I think to be a really good attorney, you have to be comfortable with the fact that people aren't always going to like you. And I do think that sometimes in this field where we know that that's really the goal, let's just see if we can't solve this together and support the parent and get this done, that you really want to stay there. But sometimes you gotta step out and file what needs to be filed, even though you know you might get that call, or your supervisor might get that call, because that is kind of, you know, you got to have, I don't know which is the push and which is the pull, but you know, you got to have both sides of it for it to work.
Absolutely. I think the key takeaway is to not be one note in your practice, but to have a balance of these two approaches, and to know, kind of figure out when to use them, because that's going to make you the most effective in your practice. You know, you do see the attorneys who are just adversarial all the time. You say, go to family court, right? That's what everyone says. Go into the folks yeah. who do divorce work. And they are dialed up to 10 all day long. I don't know how they turn it off when they go home. Mm-hmm. But it's a different culture than dependency court. And, you know, when you see a practitioner like that come into dependency court, you see dependency court start to fail. You see the cases start to bog down and go sideways, because that practitioner only knows one way to practice. You know, they are a hammer and every problem is a nail, and they just want to come into dependency court and bang away. And everyone, all the practitioners around them are kind of like, hey, dial it down a little. This is the part where we actually talk to each other. So
that's
it's a good example of how we are different in dependency court than a lot of the other courts.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of a call for everyone out there to really look at what does your practice look like. Do you find that you are always fighting or always collaborating? Let this be your call to take a look and see whether you could use some more balance in your practice to be more effective on behalf of your client. So thanks everybody for listening. I hope this has given you some food for thought in your practice.
And don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. See you next time.
You've been listening to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates. Please take a moment to subscribe and spread the word. Thank you.